Welcome, all of you wine and true crime lovers. I'm Brandy.
And I'm Chris.
And this is Texas Wine and True Crime. Thank you for being here, friends. This week, I am recording with the Female Mentor podcast. Chris?
You're kind of recording with me, too.
I'm definitely recording with you now. I recorded with them earlier this week.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
These days. It's Easter. Happy Easter.
Happy Easter.
Happy Easter to all of our listeners out there. I hope today was full of food and desserts.
And presents.
Presents. I know it is kind of like a Christmas, I feel like, for our kid a little bit.
What movie is associated with Easter? Like, we watch a bunch of Christmas movies on Christmas. What do we...
Well, today we've just been watching like 1980 gangster movies. So,
no, but I was thinking, you know, like,
I thought maybe you were in a mood.
A Christmas Story or, you know, things. Rudolph. What do you have? What do you watch on Easter? Group poll. Group poll.
What is that?
Like a poll. Have a poll.
What? I don't know what that is. Group poll?
Poll, like take a poll. People will send in
responses. Oh, a group poll. Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't know what you were saying at first.
Okay. That got weird real quick.
All right. Well, we are closing out the month, but Chris, we will be at Henry's Majestic this Thursday, April 4th.
For a new month.
For a new month. Just like every first Thursday of every new month, we are at Henry's. You don't want to miss this. We are going to be talking about Darlie Routier case live at Henry's. We're also going to be...
it's not going to be AIS
out there. Yeah, I know. Yeah, we've got other things to do. We're just going to send our AI versions out to Henry's, see if anybody notices. We're going to have to whip those up in a few days.
We'll need new screens for that.
Yeah, new screens for that. No, we will be there live to see our friends at Henry's this Thursday. So if you're local, come see us. Chris, since I recorded with the lovely ladies of the Female Mentor podcast.
I still had to cook, right?
You did cook. And we had some wine. So why don't you tell our listeners what we had?
Well, you want to talk about the wine and I'll talk about what we had.
Okay. So what we decided to drink, Chris, with this delicious dish you prepared was a 2018 amalgamation, which is a red blend. I do believe, I know in one of the other varietals, red blend of Al amalgamation is a Petit Verdot, a Merlot blend. This is considered a red cab as well. So this is considered a red blend. So good. This is from Ron Yates. If you are a Texas wine fan, you have heard of Ron Yates. So delicious wine. What did you pair it with?
Well, it was kind of a juicy wine when I first initially sampled it. And so we decided to go with some very thick cut pork chops that were bacon wrapped, as well as a potato galette and some asparagus that neither my daughter nor my sister would eat, which I thought was kind of strange.
I ate it.
Grown people. A grown person didn't eat the asparagus, so that was kind of funny. But yeah, it was kind of a very kind of fatty, juicy dish. And then also to top off the bacon-wrapped pork chop was a balsamic fig reduction. And so kind of earthy tones. It was a little mildly sweet, but it had the acidity from the vinegar, the balsamic vinegar. Sorry. And I thought it was really good.
It was
really nice. I mean, I think the wine kind of paired well as well.
Your sauce, the topping... I want that for everything you make.
Yeah, I like one of that sauce on the topping on some cheese, and then just the wine with that too would have been nice. I thought. But yeah, it was a good dish. I think it went really well. It was very heavy though because the potato galette was cooked in butter too, and so just that's kind of what I was thinking. That'd be a good way to meld them all together.
That's right, and it worked perfectly. I had already posted pictures of the wine and the food this week, and people who are Ron Yates fans, of course, saw your dish and said, "Wow, who made this?"
Yeah, we've been saving that wine for quite some time.
We are ready to drink it and dive into it.
So. It's been getting I would say it was passed over. We just were kind of choosing its
waiting for the right
service
dish
to us wisely.
That's right,
and it served us well.
Well, you did a fantastic job on the dish. Thank you, Ron Yates, and all of the Texas winemakers out there for making this delicious wine that we got to share with our listeners. And Chris, I wanted to put this episode out today, and I know the ladies at the Female Mentor Podcast are releasing it tonight too. Today is March 31st, which is Ebbie Stepick's birthday. Okay. That is the case that I covered with the ladies earlier this week. That podcast, they are out of Little Rock, Arkansas. And this is an unsolved case out of Little Rock. A lot of moving parts and confusion in this case. How she was found, where she was found, how long it took to find her. We're going to be covering all of that in this episode. So
can't wait to.
Yeah, it's one of those mind-boggling cases where you're just like, where I will say this in the episode and the recording is, I think the police probably know a lot more than we know. They typically do, but what I mean by that is I think there's just maybe one or two pieces missing out of really solving this case. I think that she was probably with some identified people that evening. I think they probably have looked into these people. She had told someone something happened to her the night before she was killed. And what do we always say? What was happening in the last 24, 48 hours of their life? Were they sharing any information with anyone? Were they going through anything? So we're going to cover all of this about Ebbie Stepick. All right. Enjoy the episode.
Welcome to the Female Mentor Podcast. We're the female mentors you always wanted, you knew you needed, but you never had.
Here we are.
In person.
Yes. Yeah. Welcome back.
Thanks. It was kind of a harrowing drive, to be honest.
Yeah.
For the listeners, I have a camper called the Eager Beaver, which I think I've talked about on this show.
Yes.
Yeah. And it was way too muddy to park it in my yard in New Hampshire. They'd had a lot of the snow melt and all that. And so I thought, well, I'll just bring it with me. I was picking it up from the shop. I'd been in the shop for warranty stuff all winter, which was nice. They gave me free winter storage. not free, but I had to pay for this.
Well, yeah.
Some of the work I had to pay for. But anyway, I picked it up and just left town from the camper place. And I got about less than 2 hours away, and the trailer slipped the ball hitch.
Oh,
I didn't tell you this?
No.
Oh, surprise.
Wow.
And so it came clean off the hitch and then rear-ended my vehicle, which I like to say, not many people can say they got rear-ended by their own beaver.
Right? And yeah. Okay. Well, what was going through your head when, what?
It scares the shit out of you.
Yeah.
But I kind of knew what happened because I could see the trailer closer to the vehicle.
Eesh.
And so I pulled off and it made an awful noise. And I wondered if I'd had a blowout and stuff too, but it was the tongue jack on the interstate.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I don't want to wander too far, but I called the state police, which was my mistake, I learned. Because I thought, well, it's an interstate and there's a lot of traffic. And I thought I need someone to come
help.
Do a flare
yeah.
or something because I can't get out of my truck. I regretted it later that I didn't call AAA first because state police called his buddy for the tow truck. So I paid a lot for that tow that
yeah.
I shouldn't have because I pay for all kinds of insurance and AAA and anyway.
Oh.
But they got me hooked back up and I went down. I only lost like 2 or 3 hours and I got down the road and I got the camper here. And
are you and Jack Black still on the AAA together?
We are. She's my AAA yeah. spouse. Yep.
Yeah.
I have a single mom friend that needs AAA worse than I do, but I always get the spouse. I was like, well, I'll just make it her. Yeah. So we call her our Jack Black. Most people on our show get a nickname, especially if they're local, because then they're more free to talk about
yeah.
things. So I'm talking because we also have a guest today. So Brandy Diamond from Texas Wine and True Crime. We've had her on before, but we begged her to come back because we had so much fun. And also, we also love wine, and we wanted to talk about a Little Rock case. I'm here with Elisa. I didn't even introduce myself.
That's okay. They know I'm here.
Yep. And I'm Marion.
It's fine.
If you enjoy the Female Mentor podcast, please share the show on whatever podcast app you're listening to. Rate us. There's even a Q&A section on Spotify. Go on there and ask why you don't hear us eating and drinking anymore or whatever it is. So that's the only feedback we ever get is because we had an episode that is evergreen for some reason. It's still getting downloaded called What the Heck is Walkaway Wife Syndrome? And it is a really good episode, but I don't know why that one is like the one. But every once in a while, a new person will listen to it and they'll make a comment. And
it is.
We haven't been, it's been a year and a half or something. So we don't have quite the.
We were chomping down though. We listened to it.
It was. I mean, it's a fair criticism. So anyway, do share the show. We also have a buymeacoffee.com/femalementorpod arranged as buy me a charcuterie. Even though we aren't eating right now, but you can get us grocery store wine. You can get us chunks of cheese, whatever. Really just levels. But do check that out if you want to support us. We have some regular supporters I love to shout out. That's the librarian, my BFF, the other preacher's daughter, Ambrosia and Rosie the Riveter. We love you. Thank you so much. And I think that's pretty good. We're here with Jason. I'm actually in the studio, Wolfman Studios, with Jason Tedford.
Yay!
Yay! Yeah, I missed you guys. follow this woman. Of course, is going to be our guest. So at Texas Wine and True Crime on Instagram, and we'll let her give us other places she can be found. But that's the main thing. In fact, as we speak, the day we're recording, she's going to be on ID channel. Is that correct?
That's right. Okay. Hi, everyone.
I love investigation discovery. Me but too. Yeah, Brandy Diamond, welcome.
Yes. Thanks, Joel. Great to be back. So tonight I'll be on the investigation discovery. Discovery Plus actually has a true crime, so I think you can find it there too. But investigation discovery at 9 Eastern on Mean Girl Murders, Season 2, Episode 1.
Nice.
So,
yeah. Are you allowed to say what case you talk about on that show?
Yeah, we did Carrie Ann Murphy. So Mean Girl Murders is really about young women who commit murder. So Carrie Ann Murphy, the mother did not want her having the relationship with the young woman. And then that young woman is then led into the home and attacks the mother. Very interesting story right outside Houston. The woman actually slept with a gun under her pillow and she couldn't even get to it in time.
So that's like the Slenderman kids. The Slenderman murders just baffles me because the kids are so young. But
she couldn't even get to her weapon. And I think she slept with that for a reason. There were lots of things leading up to the murder. She was forbidding her daughter from seeing this young woman. Actually, she was older than her daughter was, which was one of the reasons her mother did not want her interacting with her. Mm. Very interesting story. I hope it's not the last one I do. I was the podcaster researcher on the case. So, yeah, fun, right? Fun stuff. So, something new.
National I was nerding TV. Out because I love Investigation Discovery. I'm like, we talk about it on the show, like the early 2000s reenactments. Who the bleep did I marry? Is probably my favorite show. It's terrible. But it's nice to share that in common with a guest so you don't feel quite as much like a weirdo for caring about those things. But I'll actually let Lisa talk about our topic for tonight because I've talked a lot. You want to tell them what we're discussing tonight, why we got Brandy here?
Yes. So we are doing a cold case, one that is local to Little Rock. And really, before I get into my very imperfect timeline.
We never, on this show, there are not requirements for that.
I know. But I feel as though if someone's really trying to learn about just the story, they're going to have a hard time with, I want to come learn about the story. I'm just going to say, hey, just go read a quick article about it and then jump in with us.
Or the Helen Gahn podcast is a great one. They do Arkansas cases. It's one of my favorites. So I do recommend season 4 of Hell and Gone. And then there are TV ones. There are a few, like Dateline and a couple others, I think.
Yes. And Dr. Phil.
Dr. Phil.
He doesn't really do a good job of telling the story either, because I didn't watch it.
Well, it's not a true crime show, Dr. Phil.
I have a little information about Dr. Phil, if you're curious.
Yes.
He's a Texan, right?
After April 17th. Well, he's from West Texas, right? So he's a Texas guy. I met him at CrimeCon. Very nice guy. But I'm actually going, he has a new show called The Dr. Phil Experience. I don't know what it is, but I got an email asking if I wanted tickets. And so I reserved 4 tickets. And you have to dress to the nines to be in this audience. And we're so excited. So I'm going to go see Dr. Phil live.
That's fun.
I can't wait to hear about it on your show. Yeah.
I went to go see him when he came to Little Rock. And this was forever ago when the Clinton School of Public Service, when they used to do, they still have it. Mm-hmm. Like after COVID, they've ramped it up again and they have speakers.
Yeah, I saw RBG.
Yeah,
their speaker series.
That was their speaker series. So when he came, I went to the State House Convention Center. Of course, I was late. So
I wouldn't have made a commentary on that. You said it.
I was insanely late, but I made it. That's all I remember about it.
Oh, okay.
He was that unrememberable.
okay.
Anyway, so before we dive into the Ebi Stepik story, I just want to say, like, this has been a case that is, I'm trying to think, it's like when it came out, because it was 2015, I remember my life in 2015, and so I wasn't necessarily, like, paying attention to the news and stuff like that. I just really remember seeing her, like, posters and the billboards.
I remember the billboards for sure.
And I was like, what? And that's when I remember being like, what is going on? And why I feel very close to this is when my daughter started 9th grade, and that's like your freshman year here in Little Rock. I know it's different, like freshman year is different places, but that was freshman year, whole new school for my daughter. And Ebi was her first, like, friend at Lisa Academy. Mm. And they glommed on to each other. Mm. And it was, so my daughter is extremely introverted, and it takes a lot to get to know her.
I was going to say, for to be someone she considers a good friend.
Yeah. And Ebi was so outgoing. And really, that's what Marisha needed at that time in her life, is someone who's going to push her outside of her comfort zone. No, let's go meet friends. And, like, you know, always like, let's have fun. You know, that was Ebi. It was, she just was really, honestly, when I think back, I'm like, that's exactly what Marisha needed at that point. I mean, and so I'm very thankful that that is who Marisha met, and they would do sleepovers. Like, Marisha would go over and sleep at Ebi's house, and Ebi stayed at our house. They went to, we took them to, like, Riverfest, that used to be that festival that it's no more anymore, but we went, you know, we took her with us to do different things. And really they would have probably stayed friends, but we actually ended up taking and changing Marisha's school.
Right.
So she went from and here's a little background, because when I listen to other podcasts or news stories, they talk about, they really hype up like, well, Ebi, she moved from a private school to a public school. I'm like, that's not really what Lisa Academy was, a charter school, which is not necessarily a private school. It's a charter school.
It's kind of a hybrid.
Yeah.
If people aren't familiar outside of Arkansas, particularly in Arkansas, it's like a hybrid of public-private. They have a lot of required teachers to be certified, similar to public school. And so it's not a full on private school in that they kind of do just whatever they want.
Right. And you don't pay tuition.
Right.
So it's really hard to explain what it is, but anyway, so here's what I know is that Ebi, obviously she was 18 at the time that, like, she went missing and obviously she was murdered. I'm going to go ahead and say that. Sorry if I'm ruining the surprise for y'all, but, she was 18. And so this is another thing I failed to say. She was repeating her senior year.
Okay. I knew she was a little older, but I never really put a lot of...
Now, I don't know if... Now, here... And this is where I might be wrong. She might have been repeating a year somewhere back before she started high school or repeating her senior year. And that's what I don't... I'm not sure.
I did, for some reason, understand that she hadn't graduated.
Right.
I think that...
Yeah. She was not... She had not graduated. So she moved, like, for basically her senior year, she changed schools. So to me, that makes me think... Maybe she was repeating, so that's why she wanted to go to a different school, which makes sense to me, but I don't know if that was the grade that she was necessarily going back to repeat. It could have already been earlier on. I'm not real sure. But like I said, so she spent the night at our house. Marisha went over to her house, and I'll get into like the personal nuggets on the things that I observed when we get into the timeline. Because I've gone back and forth, because some of the stuff that I have a personal opinion on, I feel like it might be considered disrespectful, but I feel like it's part of the case. And I'm certainly not trying to victim blame, and I'm not victim blaming by Ebby by any means. I'm just saying, or like anybody has any control over someone else doing something.
Right. Well, there's plenty of people who have zero connection to the case that will happily bloviate about whatever they think. You know, Brandy can probably speak to that more because she's in that world, but there's plenty of folks that,
I just have some things, like, I'm sorry, that doesn't sit well with me. Like, there's just certain things. And I don't know that that's really that unpopular of opinion. But anyways, so the night that Ebby, like, the last phone call, this is the last, not even real known whereabouts, was a phone call to her brother. Mm-hmm. So she had an older brother, and, like, he's like, where are you? She was basically incoherent. She was... telling him that she was outside his house, and he goes out to look. There's no car. And basically, you know, I've heard it so many times, and I don't know the direct quote, but she's basically like, I'm fucked up, or I fucked up, or something along those lines.
Right. Yeah. That's the way I've always.
And I've always heard I fucked up. Not
I always
I'm
heard
fucked.
It. I was like,
okay.
As though she had taken something or something had been given to her. But again, that's just,
it is
reported different ways. So,
yeah.
And her brother is no longer with us tell us he passed away. So I have heard on, the gal that he was dating at the time, and they lived together, and she knew Ebby at that time, has talked about it a little bit, but she didn't hear she only heard his side of the conversation, but she says that. She said, I only heard, you know, and this is my perspective. And that.
So going back a little bit, so the day before, Ebby contacted her stepdad and told her stepdad that she had been to a party and that she was sexually assaulted by four guys, men there, and that they videoed it. So she's telling her stepdad this, and she's wanting to go to the police.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my question. Why are they making this like, okay, we'll get together later to go to the, do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah. I found that confusing too. Like if I'm her stepdad, I'm like, tell me where you are
now.
I'm getting you right now.
Now.
Yeah. But he is this, I don't know. She didn't want to tell her mom. I know that. But if Ebby really was ready, like you're saying, I would have jumped on it because I mean, plenty of times victims don't want to report, or the longer it goes, they change their mind, that sort of thing. So,
and I think that's why it makes this timeline very strange, because I feel as though, and I'm sorry, family of Ebby, I'm sorry, but I feel that piece is kind of glossed over and it makes the timeline funky. Do you understand?
Yeah.
Like, no, we called and, you know, she wanted to go to the police and we were going to set a time. I'm like, I'm sorry. I can't wrap my head around that. Like, let's go now. Because what it did is it set so much time in between. Like, Ebby's 18 years old, remember yourself at 18. You're like, screw it. I'm going to go fix it. I'm going to, you know, whatever it is.
Right.
I'll go talk to them. Maybe I can be reasonable. Maybe I can do this. That's too much set up for anything. And if the guys know that Ebby knows that they have video, at a certain point, somebody's going to be like, yeah, we got to shut this down. At that point, you're like, no, this is way too risky. Let's go now. Like, this is a drop everything. Let's go now.
I mean,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I was looking at this timeline when I was, you know, we always say, look, and what was this person doing 24 to 48 hours before mm-hmm. they were killed?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Or they disappear, right? Because in this case, she disappeared and then was found deceased over 3 years later, mm-hmm. 64. Where her car was found. So you have to think she told her stepfather about this. And from what I understand, he actually made two or three phone calls to the Little Rock Police Department during that time
frame. That's right.
Period, right? Where she had told her stepdad, but had not yet gone to the police with her stepdad. So a lot of people think, was she calling in kind of psyching herself up to have this conversation? Was she unsure about something? I had also read that she said she had been sexually assaulted and videotaped, but that she was basically trying to figure out how it took place. So for me, I'm thinking, were drugs involved? Was she not awake? Was she sexually assaulted while she was passed out? And then when she woke up, she could feel something wasn't right. And women instinct and girl instincts is like, something has happened to me. I know something has happened to me. Here's who I was with. And maybe she's like putting the pieces together.
Oh, yeah.
That's the only reason I can think of, you know, I don't know. I feel like we're parents. You know, and I, you know, it's her stepdad. I don't know what that relationship was like. And I mean, she confided in him. I mean, she felt close enough to tell him this immediately, you know, but was there a little uncertainty of the details when mm-hmm. it came to that translation from Ebby to her stepfather? So those are just things we don't know. We don't know exactly what she said. You know, she had been, you know, she yeah. wasn't living with her parents at the time. She was couch surfing. She was living on different friends' apartments. Her family, her grandmother specifically, she was living mainly with her grandparents in regard, like her parents had asked her to leave the home. So her grandmother always had the addresses of where she was going to be staying. So she would actually end up coming forward and giving some of these names of mm-hmm. people that had been with. So I wish we had more information on what the, you know, they're holding a lot of tight to the vest, because this is considered an unsolved case. And to the Little Rock, or to the police, you hear differently, let me know. I heard this was not a cold case and that they have an actual detective working this actively. Now, I don't know how actively, or if they're waiting on tips and that's when they become active. But the timeline is, I'm at a party, something happens. I then go to my boyfriend's house and tell him about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
She calls her boyfriend and says, this has happened to me. She goes to his apartment. He says, he tells, you know, in interviews that he let her sleep in his sister's room. He didn't want to ask her too many questions. He just wanted to comfort her. I was a little suspicious when I was kind of hearing him again, but you can really tell. And, you know, once I started, because that's, again, if your girlfriend just came to your place and she, you know, this has happened, why are you not making her go to the police? And so mm-hmm. you have these people that aren't taking action, which makes you wonder, what could they be hiding? So I'm sure he was very heavily looked at, considering she went there after this. But then he says she left first thing in the morning. It seems like Ebby's mom and him have a pretty close relationship. I think she even says, I love him in one of her interviews. So I saw that. They have cleared him. But again, it's, you know, it's, we're not, he didn't want to ask her any questions, right? And what could they have done? I'm sure they go back as parents now and as friends and the brother, right? When he was here thinking, you know, what else could I have done? What else should we have done? And you know, but to me, I'm thinking if she didn't share specific details with the boyfriend or the stepfather, I'm thinking maybe she had to put some pieces together that she may have not been sure about.
I like that. I like that. But I think
there may have been a little uncertainty in her mind, but just she knew something had happened and she knew it had been recorded. So, mm-hmm. I don't know. I feel like if she would have, I don't know. It's hard, right? Like you're 18, you have a name. There's a lot going on at that age. You don't want people to know there's embarrassment. I would not be surprised if she transferred schools. Mm-hmm. If she in her senior year, there's a shame with that and embarrassment. So maybe she didn't want to tell anybody anything, but she knew exactly what happened to her that
right.
night. Mm. But it does make the little timeline a little fuzzy.
I think you've hit the nail right on the head with the parents and everyone around her going, what? I wish I had done more. I wish I had paid more attention. You can email the show if you disagree. But I knew Ebby again. I didn't know her for a super long time, but this is what I think. And me as a wild teenager, I was the one doing all kinds of nutty things. My parents were probably just like, "What is it now?" I think that at a certain point, because I know that she was acting out. I know that she was boy crazy. I was boy crazy. I know this. I think that at a certain point, you're like, oh, you know, you're like, what is it now? And I'm not saying that in a negative way, but I think that's a lesson for everyone where it's like, well, that girl got what she deserved and that's not fair. You see what I'm saying? It's like,
yeah, and that's a thing, like, as someone who consumes true crime mm-hmm. podcasts and different things, the longer you do it, the more you think about these things and how nobody deserves to be murdered.
No.
I mean, at the end of the day, I don't care what, even convicted criminals, like, for the most part, you're like, nobody deserves to be murdered. So, to me, that all should, people should kind of walk away from that and realize something awful has happened to this person. Nobody's asking for that. No, I mean, I've made some stupid decisions. I was talking about things that I've done in my 30s. Like sometimes you've just been in a bad situation. Some of it was decisions you made to get there, but it doesn't change the fact that this extreme and awful thing happened to a human being.
And back to your point, Brandy, if she was at a party and she had taken something or she drank too much, that doesn't mean, oh, that's okay, we can rape her and video it. She left herself vulnerable. Okay, so she asked.
Right, and plenty of people, like, third person will say things like that. No woman deserves, you know, it doesn't matter. She doesn't deserve to be raped. But then when it comes down to, like, they think they kind of know something about it, I feel like they get a little more, I don't know, pride about it, say, oh, well, blah, 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 blah.
I think that she was, I mean, especially when, you know, when you're talking about the idea that she wasn't living at home, she was staying at people's houses, she was, I'm going to go do my own thing. I'm going to go to this party. I'm going to not do this. I'm not going to go to school. I'm going to go to this instead. She was in that, I don't know. I know not every person does it, but I remember, yes, giving it hell. And my parents had to be like, oh my God, what is it now? And I don't think that she fell through any crack. I think that it was, like you said, there's a lot of complex layers going on from the parenting angle of, like, how do we parent this person, this woman into being a woman, a functional human, you know, okay, we got to get her on the other side of this.
Right.
But at the same time, without putting her in a cage, mm-hmm. you can't do both. Yeah. And
I think we never think it's going to happen to our kids, right? Yeah. And you know, I'm sure Ebby's mother never thought that her daughter would, you know, would end up in a found in a storm drain, murdered. And we're going to talk about that because I think that's I think this is key to it can happen to any of us. And I think it's also based on what her brother says was her demeanor when she made that phone call of confusion, not really know if she knew was in her car, but she, you know, again, she told him she's in front of his house. I mean, you also have to think, what are the things that are going to make you say things like that, that are untrue? Okay. Because that's just not normal. It's not normal to say I'm in my car in front of your house when you're not. So you're talking either psychotic break of complete anxiety of just, I mean, a complete psychotic break, psychosis, to where you don't know where you're parked. She's, you know, she was found in a park that she visited often, by the way. And not only that, she would park her car and sort of, that was like her happy place. I mean, that's what's so sad about this, that she would actually go there to relax. And this is where she's found. And so, you know, she was there. So was it uncommon for her to be there? No, it wasn't. It was actually pretty common for her to go there. So was she there and then came upon someone, or someone came upon her? I don't know that area very well. I'm sure y'all shed some light on this. But just for everyone listening, she goes to that party, reports the information the next day to her stepfather, and then she calls her brother, says, I screwed up, I met whatever she had, whatever the words were. I'm in my car in front of your house. That's when he goes out to look. She's not there. And then the phone just goes dead and nobody hears from her ever again. So what we do know is that she is found in a storm drain 60 feet from where her car is found over 3 years later. So we're talking 2015's a disappearance, 2018 her body is found. I can't even believe, you know, first of all, shoddy. I love the police. I have a lot of policemen who listen to the show. I interview Texas Rangers. I have a lot of respect for the justice system and police officers. But just like any other profession, you can drop the ball. And the ball was absolutely dropped in this case. It was totally inexcusable that she is found 3 years later, 60 feet from her car. And not only that, you have police officers who said they searched that storm drain and they didn't. So why are you, you know, there's all the broken makeup, right? The things that her mother noticed about this car, you know, and just saying my daughter would not have done this. Right. And, you know, there's foul play. And here's another interesting thing. Her car is found with the ignition on, dead battery, ran out of gas, and the car is still turned. So that's either an abduction situation, you're pulled out of the car while the car is running, or you're getting out of the car with the intent. I don't think she just was in the car. I mean, do you know if they found blood or anything like that in the vehicle? Because I don't think they did.
I don't know
how
good of a search they did. I mean, they found a towel near her car that months or years later they realized belonged to her brother, so it would have belonged to her, but they said, oh, it wasn't even related. There was somewhere, I don't know about blood in the car, and I also don't know how much of a search they did right off the bat, right? Like, did it go somewhere before anybody did any forensic work?
This is what I was writing down as far as that timeline. So they found the car parked at the park. They don't do the forensic stuff at the park. They move the car to some type of lot. So think about this. So think about where her body was found in the drain. It wasn't just you look down and there's the body. It had been pushed like into the drain pipe. Like there's the manhole cover. There is a ladder. So now they're saying, well, maybe she put herself down there. Okay. And put the manhole cover back. Okay.
And she was little, right? She's a little a smaller 18-year-old.
She was tiny.
Yeah.
And her body was pushed up into that drain pipe. So the timeline, found car, parked it into the at the police lot, left the trunk open. A giant rain comes, destroys any sort of chance of doing any sort of forensics in the trunk whatsoever.
And we get, in this area, we get deluges. It rarely does it just like shower, which is why this storm drain thing is really heinous. Mm-hmm. Because you just get, I mean, it just is going to keep coming.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what I'm thinking, they didn't check the drain. They could have, I bet, and this is just pure speculative, if they had lifted that manhole cover before they took the car, I guarantee they probably would have seen her body right there. Mm-hmm. But they took the car, giant rain comes. What happens? It pushes her,
If it rained in the trunk of that car...
So much that it destroyed any sort of chance.
Oh,
of,
my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's another important piece of this. And I think this is important. She's found 70 feet in the drain. Mm-hmm. That we have to think about that, because that means somebody would have had to physically get in there with her and push her that far in. You're not going to be able to push 70 feet just standing there. Body. Somebody would have had to wiggle in there, push her, and then pull themselves out.
I think
the rain, I mean, yeah. 3 years of being stuck in there is what pushed her that far. And isn't that, so one of her friends and that friend's mother went to the park not long after the disappearance, within the first year, and I think within the first few weeks, and reported to the police a smell coming from the drain. And they claimed they went and checked that and didn't, just like the
again
did not go and tried to play it off as sewage, which is not a sewage. If my understanding is, it's a storm drain, which if you don't know the difference, like you cannot dump an RV into a storm drain. That is the water that goes. That's the runoff.
Right.
It goes into freshwater places, creeks and that sort of thing. It is not anywhere near, it's similar, but it's not the same as a sewer system. And you would not mistake sort of something that had been wet for a while for something that had been dead for a while.
I also think you're trying to get rid of her quickly. So she's not brought there. She's there. Mm-hmm. It happened there. And they've got to find somewhere to put her.
Oh, yep. I absolutely think it was opportunity that's where she was found. I mean, a part of me thinks, as we're discussing this, that someone knew that was where to find her, was at the park. You're saying she went there frequently. I don't, I mean, I hadn't really thought about that before. So I don't know a lot about this park in particular, but West Little Rock's actually like the nicer part of town. It's a little more suburban, and like Little Rock is a kind of has a rough history and some areas of town that are, you already know, kind of you don't hang out there or whatever. This is not that part of town. Like our fancy promenade mall is out that direction. So just put in perspective, it's not a park where you go, oh, I'd be worried my kid was there.
No. There's like a neighborhood pool. It's got, they had a security guard that worked there. I mean, which.
Right. I was hoping we'd talk about the security guard.
Let's talk about him. What do you think? I've got some ideas.
I don't know. I mean, I kind of am of the thing, like somebody can just be a weird person.
Yeah.
But there is like weird missing information with that. Like he supposedly had these other two guys that claimed they were working for him, but there's no, I mean, he might've been paying teenagers under the table or whatever. I mean, any number of things, but there's so many kind of different stories about what they did on their patrols and who was there and what he knows. And I don't know. It's a bit, he's an odd character.
He was very aware that Abby was a regular. Like, she came and parked there all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So for him to report, hey, this car, I don't know, is parked here. He knew whose car that was. Make sense.
Right.
distancing yourself from the situation, right? You make a call in and you're like, oh, a car. Like, if he says it's Ebby's car, most people would if they were showing concern. But some people don't want to get involved.
Right.
And if they know it's been there for days, something may not be right. And if he associates himself knowing her, it could have just been a simple, I'm just going to pretend I don't know whose car this is. Right.
Yeah. I don't know that it's nefarious per se, but it's just odd.
It is odd.
Because if I would, okay, put yourself in that situation. You're a security guard and you're like, so-and-so's car, that girl I know, like mm-hmm. she comes here mm-hmm. all the time. Her car's here for 2 days now.
Right.
If I'm calling that in, I'm like, hey, I know this. I've seen, this is a regular, it's a young woman. I know she comes here a lot. And for some reason, her car's here.
Well, and I feel like, how would he have not heard that she was missing?
Yeah, also that.
Arkansas. Okay, so
yeah,
I joke true. That the whole state is a small town. But Little Rock is the biggest city in Arkansas, but it's not a big city. Most people know, I mean, that is big time news. It would be hard for me to believe he didn't know about someone went missing that he was somewhat familiar with. Do you know what I mean? Like, uh-huh.
I agree.
And he did not offer up his dash cam video, which he had.
Right. Until much later when suddenly, now the computer won't read this anymore.
Oh, it rewrites over itself every 30, something like that. It was
like CCTV things. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I hope investigators have spoken to him at length. I do hope they've done their research when it comes to anyone that could have been involved in this. The four boys, yeah. young men that were supposedly involved in the sexual assault, they've all been questioned and cleared of any suspicion. Have you heard differently?
I've only heard what Lori says, and I've listened to her interviews. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that she's convinced that these four men are clear. Because every interview that I've heard her talk about, she talks about the fact that when they did the investigation, they're like, can we see yours? We need to look at your phone. We want to look at, and they're like, nope. And the police were like, okay. Like, there was no, like, let's look and see if there is right. a video. Let's,
I feel you like know. You would have had enough to try to subpoena phone.
Yeah. And she talks about that. And she doesn't not bring it up.
I wonder if there's an element of, because we are deep south. I mean, some people think Arkansas is Midwest. No.
It is
south. We're deep south. And there's still the old boy kind of like, well, she's already gone. I mean, I don't mean to be indelicate right. about it, but she's already gone. Why ruin the lives of these boys? Right? There's always that. We don't want to wreck their future.
All the time. Texas.
It happens all the time.
Yeah, I got to wonder. I mean, even 20... whatever year that was, 2018, that you're still not, oh man, well, what, you know, the past is past and these guys are young. We don't want to ruin their lives.
Yeah. I was about to say, especially if they're young, mm-hmm. especially if the perpetrators are young, there seems to be a mindset of there. I mean, there was one case not that far from where I, and it was said to be a suicide. It was called in a suicide, right? So when you make a phone call to 911 and you say, you know, that's why it's important to not really identify, especially when you don't know, right? So when you call that in, that's what they're going to approach the scene as. And so they had that in their head, and you have these young people, right? These 5-6 young people in this house where this happens, and conflicting stories. Something doesn't seem to match. Nobody saw anything, but there was someone sitting next to this young man. And so it's this, but then the police were kind of like, okay, you know, and I think it's real. I think the good old boy, the why ruin these young people's lives is a real thing. And you know, I don't know if that's, if it's the battle of like, what is the, you know, yes, they want justice, but when there's a bunch of muddy waters, especially like when you have in this case, it may seem muddy to us, but to the police, it may not be so muddy. They might have some clear ideas about what happened to this young girl, and they're just not doing anything. We see it way too much. I don't know the reasoning behind it, but hopefully with the... Now, let's talk about the investigator that's on this. So he was in retirement, right? And mm-hmm. then he came back. So is this... Isn't he the one who actually said we need to go back to the park and take a look? I think he is the one who actually said we need to go back, take a look at the park, go back to where her car was found. And then this is when they end up finding her. So, you know, good intention coming from that. So I'm hoping that, you know,
so
that he's looking.
Yeah.
It looked at the records about what was actually said back in 2015.
So what I will say about the detective that came out of retirement. So he was hired by Lori because at this point she knew nothing was happening. So, and I was listening where she, I mean, I was just writing down exactly what she was saying because I'm like, this is so true. She's at this point, she's like, I don't care who you are. I'm emailing you and I'm CCing the mayor. I'm CCing the chief of police. I'm CCing the governor. She's like, I don't care. She's like, so she did get a meeting with the chief of police and her detective that was on the case. Basically, she felt threatened. He was mad. Like she had police, she has police officers and detectives mad at her. And so when she hired that detective that came out of retirement, his first job was to let's go smooth things over. I was a Little Rock police officer forever. You know, he even said his words like, this is my home. Mm-hmm. I know, like, and so his first thing was to like, let's get some type of relationship back established. And he, because of that, because of his work, the Little Rock Police Department has been hiring people that have gone into retirement to work on those cold cases because they have a churn, because Little Rock is a high crime.
Yeah.
It's not like when you see, and this is such a bad example, but like Fargo and you're sitting at the, and they're like, oh, police, you know, a phone call. We'll go check out this abandoned car immediately. Right. Like, I'm sure there was a list of like, first stop here, then stop here. Okay. You know, I know that it's bad police work when I look at the whole case in entirety, but I know that there's a long task list. And so does that make sense? It's like, I'm trying to make, sense of all of it.
Right.
Herman has the luxury of having a cold case unit, right? Mm-hmm. So, but they have to be actively investigated. So they're overwhelmed. They respond to a lot of calls. And, you know, is it true they did show up though when the security guard made the phone call that her car was actually at the park for a few days? They didn't come immediately.
No, they didn't. They didn't.
Again, I think he had to call again or even a third time. So I don't know. I hadn't really thought about him being involved just because I feel like even though some perpetrators will include themselves into the investigation just to keep close eyes onto what's going on. But to make that second and third phone call, an urgency to come look at that car, that kind of just makes me, I don't know. I'm not steering towards that direction.
Yeah.
I feel like when we look at these cases, we think of, I mean, this is bizarre, right? It's just bizarre. A lot of these situations are just bizarre. How did this happen? How did they get in the situation? What do you mean she didn't know where she was parked? Like, what is she on that she doesn't even know where she is? You know, and the fact is that there's cases that I have covered that have actually, what they tried to say Abby had done, which was put herself in there. Yeah. I don't believe that.
Me either.
Mainly because she is more confused, not so much in despair. I don't get disparity. I get confusion. And I don't get like erratic, upset craziness from her brother. Her brother didn't say that. He just said that she said she's far and that's right outside of his place and he's messed up and stuff. So I, you know, we think of like these bizarre things that could have happened. And at the end of the day, it's usually the most simplest of answers.
Yep.
And it usually has something to do with what's happened the day or the 2 days before they become a victim. And I really hope, and I agree with her mom, and I would not, until my daughter's case is solved, everyone's a suspect, right? Mm-hmm. And everyone should be looked at and talked to more than once. We see this a lot too in these investigations. They get their statement and then they're dismissed and they never go back. Like they need, especially if they think more than one person is involved in this, which I feel like they do based on some of the comments that have been made, that they think there were certain people that saw her at that location at the park, and they need to come forward and say what they know. Maybe they don't think that particular person actually physically did this to her, but I think that they think other people know something. And to me, is that that's young people, right? I don't know. I know Evie was hanging out with a little bit of, you know, not her typical church crowd. To her friend, she was kind of in these new friendships and relationships with people that she kind of kept to herself in secret. So, you know, we need to go back, look at these four people that could have been involved in this. If she was going to the police and she made that known to them, that could give them a reason to make her quiet. Mm-hmm. But then have the confusion of not knowing where she is. So there's two pieces to this. It's not like this girl was in her right mind, right, and somebody abducted her from her car and they found her in the drain. She is making a phone call and she doesn't know where she is. Like, that is mental. So that's drug induced or mental break.
Yeah.
So where is she getting the drugs if it is drugs? Have they gone and looked at those relationships and people that she could have been getting drugs from, if that's truly what it is? But then she makes a reference of messed up. Did she mess up by doing or saying or seeing something? Or was she messed up because of drugs and alcohol? I don't know. I mean, that's just the hard part on this case is, gosh, we just wish we had that little more answer, right, or we would, maybe there would have been something, but maybe the police haven't. We don't know it yet.
And if they had found her earlier, they could have done a better talk screen. Like, nothing, by now it's just bone marrow, I think, where you could get anything. And I mean, we're past that point, but those are the kinds of things that just drive me out of my mind. Like, you probably could have put some pieces together like that and known what drugs were in her system. I tend to, and this is speculation now for sure, I'm in the realm of speculation. I kind of wonder if she wasn't, I mean, it was known that she smoked weed, I believe. I mean, they talk about that quite a bit. I almost got the impression that she, related to the situation, she was probably given something.
I think she was.
Like, you know, roofied or whatever drugs that are, or fed something extra at that party. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if the time was long, you know, if it was too long that she should have been sobering up. I don't know how long that takes. But I know, even as not even that young of a woman, I've been in situations where, like, I probably shouldn't have driven.
Yep.
But I felt safer leaving drunk in my car than I did staying where I was. So I wonder if there's some of that. Like, why would she be out panicking in the car? Some of that, I wonder, was just, I got to get out of the situation that I'm in.
I'm not convinced that she was driving. And I'm like, but I've never That's heard her point. Mom talk about, like, seat placement or anything. Like, if she was,
well, wouldn't the car seat too far back?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, and I don't know. I've never heard anything about that, because if I'm just driving someone to get rid of them and, like, we're taking her car somewhere and we're waiting for her to pass out, like, okay, I'm not taking the keys with me. Do you see what I'm saying? And because she didn't put herself in that.
Right.
Man, then that no, drain.
I mean, talking about you think it's more than one person.
Mm-hmm.
It would have taken at least two people to put even a small other person.
Yeah.
You would have to either be really strong to lift that lid and put someone in there, or you'd have to have another person help you move a body to that situation, to that spot. So there's so many
variables and things.
But yeah, I have heard that the seat was too far back for it to have been Ebby driving.
So there you go.
But that might be rumor, right?
Yeah, I mean, I
can't
know.
Say that that's like an established fact. But if I were panicking, I mean, and I hate to put myself, but, you know, these are things you think about. If I were in the position of trying to get rid of, like, get away from a problem, I don't know that I would have the presence of mind to go, oh, better scoot the seat back. Up.
Me either.
Right.
Yeah.
Not unless I'd really planned this out, and which none of this to me looks like it was planned anywhere near more than a few hours, you know.
Yeah.
Give or take.
But the things that I find infuriating is when I think it was her brother who, like, called the police immediately after he got off the phone with her and was like, I don't know where she is. She doesn't know where she is.
And they wouldn't put out a search for her car even.
Nothing. Yeah. But also they were like, Lolo. Well, it sounds like, and they, and her case was presented as a runaway for like the first like 8 months, almost year. Because, but I'm like, you're 18. That's missing person.
And she didn't take her car.
Right.
What 18-year-old is going to leave their vehicle behind? That's their one form of transportation.
And their phone. And their
No. Right. All her stuff was in the car.
Mm-hmm. So that's infuriating. And then they had no one to go through like social media or do anything that correctly at the station. Like again, that had to be
easy
done.
Easy subpoenas, I feel like. Yeah. I mean, Brandy probably knows more about that too. But like, I feel like at this point it would be easy to go, hey, Facebook, here's a subpoena. Give us her Facebook messages. Early on, the longer you go with that too, it's easier for it to get, you know, accidentally erased. But I don't know.
So here's another thing too. There were different, why didn't the police pull these phone records of everyone? You know, see, that really mm-hmm. bothered me, especially because we don't actually know that she was at that park when she made the call to her brother.
Yeah. See, we don't know.
We don't know that. She could have been somewhere totally different and then brought to that location or drove with someone to that location. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have no idea. I mean, phone pings nowadays, listen, this is 2015, 2018, her body's found. We can pull these things. So why right. they didn't really subpoena these records of those men, of really her stuff early on, especially if they thought she was a runaway, which is really interesting because debit card records, bank account records, phone records, if you're trying to find someone and you think they ran away, these are easy ways to track them. So were they even doing this on the back end? And I don't like the fluff. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes police want to give families, and it's a shame that Lori, the mother, was treated so poorly. It's a shame that this family was told they have to wait another 12 hours to report her missing because she's 18. I have friends who are in law enforcement and they'll tell you, you don't wait. You make that phone mm-hmm. call and you keep that phone call until somebody does something. So this notion of, I feel like it's the, again, this good old boy by yeah. the book, like we got to look at behaviors here, right? We have to look, did she run away before? Why are you classifying it as this? Is it because she's not living it anymore and she's sort of wild? So you're going to go with the wild scenario. She's the wild one. She yeah. took off. She's
mm-hmm. She ran away. Yeah.
Dismissed this too easily. And I have a very local case that a man is still fighting. His wife is hit by a neighbor early morning hours and he kills the woman by hitting her with this vehicle. But he had alcohol in his breath. And the police officer who approached him, who had body cam on, is actually a friend of his. He lets him get his weapon out of the car and drives the guy home. He's never been arrested for her.
I have heard about this
murder,
case.
For her murder, for involved manslaughter. Call it whatever you want, but never ever sat in an interrogation room and questioned about what he was doing that morning. And you know what? The family was treated poorly.
Yeah, they were.
The family was treated poorly. And the husband made him feel like, you know, that there's nothing they can do and that they need to quit calling and they need to stop emailing and they need to get, you know, I think one of them even called the district attorney's cell phone and he completely lost it on them. I mean, these are human beings and families who need answers. And I don't know if people get numb. I don't know if people are, you know, police officers, they get so many of these and it happens often that there's just no feeling about it for some reason, but it happens. Unfortunately, there's a lot of lawyers and a lot of doctors who shouldn't be lawyers and doctors. And I think the same thing about law enforcement. And I think the same thing about the court system. So, you know, there needs to be change. They dropped the ball in this case. There needs to be some admission on that. I really hope this new detective is really mm-hmm. going to hone in on these phone records. I think this is going to be key. If they can find out where she was when she made that phone call to her brother and to see if there was any other movements going on with that phone before she's actually, before the car is found.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and I did want to, they interview the investigator on Hell and Gone. And I'm kind of like you. Nothing about it makes me think, I don't even know if he knew. I don't think he would have known her before he got involved. I mean, for me to think he was involved at all with what happened to her, it's just, to me, way outside the realm of the things. But then also, no slam on older people, if you're listening to the show, he's retired from police work, and he sounds quite old in the, like, how is he even going to do that? So if anybody's chasing that rabbit, I feel like you're just, I mean, some man in his late 70s, 80s is not going to have the stamina to do that for the most part. And also why there would be the motive. None of that's there. But I was curious, has your daughter talked about it since it happened?
Yeah,
do you have some of her perspective on it?
We talk about it a lot. She and this is really personal. She feels really she has some strong opinions on Ebby and her relationship with her parents. Cause you know, she's at that, Ebby's rebelling. Like in this, and if you look at where she's at in her life, and, you know, Marisha has her own observations about what that relationship really was like for Ebby. Ebby had, you know, her older brother. Like, so she has, and I'm not an expert. So, but her sister, like, it's almost like she was the kid in between the two families. Does this make sense? So with her dad, you know, not being married to her mom anymore, and then her stepdad with new children, but their children, Marisha feels is that Ebby didn't feel like she really had that place, like a belonging. So, you know, all aside, it doesn't justify none of this is justified. And just because you're at your wit's end with your teenager doesn't mean, you know, no one deserves that. You know, it's not like, aha, see, you got what you deserve. No, that's not what I'm saying. And but I'm just saying.
It almost would be more painful for the parents in a way, right?
Because
you're like, well, we just couldn't.
I can't imagine.
We couldn't deal with this anymore. She was 18. We had her leave our house.
Yeah.
I can imagine that's just an awful feeling. Like, well, what if she, there's all the what ifs. What if she was still living at home?
My heart breaks because.
You can't control. Mm-hmm. I mean, nobody could tell me what to do.
To us, right? Like that goes back to the point of just, we're going to do this because it's tough love, right? We come from a place of tough love. Mm-hmm. And this is what we feel is the best. Or maybe to get her attention. Maybe that's all they wanted.
That's all they wanted.
To get her attention and to make some changes. And putting that tough love, then things happen. And there's so much guilt that comes along with that. I cannot imagine what they have, you know, I'm a mom. I get it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure they have to live with that for the rest of their lives. But it's not their fault. You know, it's not Ebby's fault.
No.
And one thing I want to say that we didn't say, I know we talked about it before we went on air, but they classified. So we've heard multiple things, right? So they find the body 3 years later, skeletal remains, right? The mother said she was still wearing the jewelry, which is how they identified her. Mm. But the ME, the medical examiner, classified it as a homicide. And then you had them saying, well, we think she may have put herself down here. But what the first thing I thought was that I have not seen that it's been undetermined the way she.
Can we pause on our end?
No, Jason? We can. I'll fill it. So while she's gone, I just want to say, going back to the mom, like, I think she gave some sage advice because no one wants to find themselves in this position of any sort of position, just like with my brother and his daughter,
that's
all of it. No one wants to find themselves in that position. And when she was talking on this one interview that I wrote copious notes on, she's talking about, like, to anybody who's going through and, like, they're not listening to you or you're not getting any action or movement on your case. It's just like, she's like, don't be passive. Mm. Again, like, you know, she's talking about, I emailed everyone I got. She goes, I knew anyone that I knew in the media. I got on that. She goes, she talked about how you know, and you probably know the radio station. There's a local radio that does sports talk, like here in Central Arkansas. And they're talking about some Razorback baseball game, like big deal. So she calls into the station and starts talking about Ebby and changes great. The story. Like she wow, was, yeah. I mean, I'm like,
well, you gotta, I mean, that's really in situations like this when time goes by. And I feel like the police typically at some point know they messed up, right? I mean, but what gets me about that is at some point admit it. There's such a brotherhood that happens there where nobody's really allowed to mess up or admit that their buddy, you know, like, and Little Rock, to your point, there's a lot going on here for the size of the city. Yeah. There's probably not enough resources even to, but to just admit, hey, this is bigger. Mm-hmm. More quickly, I wish the culture would shift on that.
I agree.
But good on her for pushing the conversation, because that's, if they're embarrassed, they're going to do something. It's kind of like politicians don't do much without pressure. Like I used to work in politics and I was trained in one of the mantras was the strongest force in politics is inertia, meaning the more likely than not, they're just not going to do anything.
Yeah.
And so you have to keep that pressure on, and I'm sure it doesn't feel good to them when that's happening.
No.
But the point is, at some point, just call it and say, something bad happened. We need help. We messed something. It happens. Police are human beings. But for that to go on for as long as it did and repeated problems, that's where I start mm-hmm. to just get nutty about it.
And she went on. She's like, she goes, people you call and you're going to leave messages and you're going to send emails. And she goes, so many of them are not going to answer you, and just be prepared for that. And just, but she goes, she said, like, put your fear into being proactive. Just, she goes, nobody, there's no rules that say you cannot contact this person. And she goes, the one thing the police kept saying to me is don't go to the media, don't go to the media. And she's like, no, she goes, I'm going right. Go to the media. She's like, every time. I just
yeah, and so Brenda, you were talking about. Oh, go ahead then. Jump right in. Yeah,
before we were so rudely interrupted by butter, people very well. So the ME classified it as a homicide. So if we're talking about skeletal remains being found, to me there had to be some form of damage to her body for them to be able to say that. So even with these crazy theories of her putting herself down there, I think there was a clear evidence of how she died. And I think they knew that from the beginning, because I think if it would have been, well, she's been down here so long, we don't really know how she died. There's no actual physical injury to the body, you know, no broken bones in the neck, right? No gunshots. There's nothing visibly we can see. It's now going to be undetermined. But they have classified this as a homicide. So that tells me there is either clear signs, broken bones in the neck of suffocation, or she's had a gunshot wound.
Sometimes stabbing will show up on bone. I don't know if that's as easy to tell where you would automatically go, it's a murder, but.
Those are very good points.
So it depends on that. So, I mean, it could have been even something there could have been a spot, or there could have been knife wounds to the bones. Right. Mm-hmm. So you can see the jaggedness of the bone, whatever it is, because we don't know how she died. They've never come out and said how she's been killed. But I think whatever happened to her was very clear by her skeletal remains. Mm-hmm.
And it had to have been, as if we talked about the drain over and over, but and how much rain we get here. 3 years of Arkansas rain, it's gone. So it has to be very clear with the remains. Mm-hmm. So my hope is that it does push it towards some answers. And this investigator, he actually seems like he's trying.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Well, I think maybe that's why the Little Rock Police Department asked him to come back on this case. I think they know they messed up. I think that's their way
of
putting that's not them, that doesn't have in the game, right? Skin in the game. They weren't involved in the investigation when it began. Having sent a fresh set of eyes, a fresh set of ears. And it sounds like from what I I haven't listened to that podcast about it, but it sounds like this detective really cares. And, and he seems like he wants to give the family those answers. But here's the great thing. It really is good that we know that they know how she died, because that's going to be important on your list of suspects. There are all kinds of things they look at when it comes to determining that, you know, if it's a gunshot, is a young person carrying a gun? If she was with someone with a gun, who is that likely to be? Is that likely to be a gang member? Okay, we need to go back and find out who she was hanging out with. There's all these different things. If it was a knife, where did the knife come from? That would have had to come from a home, right? So, or did they have this knife on them? Who carries knives around? Like, there's all these questions they're going to be asking themselves based on how she died.
Yeah, that's so true.
Well, I mean, I hope so.
I hope so too.
It does seem like they're moving in that direction. The fact that it really isn't. I mean, she's right. It's not a cold case, actually. So I think you just said it as that, but it's an ongoing investigation. And usually cold cases are where they go to kind of sit on a shelf. So this leads me to believe there's some maybe thanks to her mom or whatever it is that they keep moving forward on this, because
her mom knows if she stops talking about it, so is everyone. And you do that. You just keep going, and it's sheer, you know, it's that empowerment and that mom-ness in us that just is like, I don't give a shit. I'm just going to do whatever I have to do to find out what happened to her. And when you get in that mindset, man.
She's
that's very good.
Mm-hmm. I was very impressed by that. I'm like, gosh, I don't know. I don't know if I could take that. At a certain point, I'd be like, well, you know, found her body. All right. Like, I don't know. I can't. It's hard for me to put myself in that. And I don't want to.
So I will try to put what I'm sure there are ways to give information about this case, since it's local to us, especially. I will get that information put in the show notes. I should have had that ahead of time.
It's just the local police department.
So they call Little Rock PD and give tips. Okay. Because
if you're not in Little Rock, call where you are, because they'll get a hold of someone in Little Rock. If you want to tell your local police and that makes you more comfortable to call it in, then you should do that and let them make that contact with Little Rock.
Let's give the family some closure, you know, and if you messed up in this situation, I mean, it very well could be they did have bad intentions and something bad, but didn't mean to kill her. Right. That is a story that needs to be told. Just, you know, I don't know that anybody who's involved in that would come forward.
Well,
and do
the boyfriend,
it, but you know what I mean?
Like, the boyfriend did talk about like that. Maybe she just accidentally took too much of something or did something. He's just,
well, sure,
again,
but it shows intent to hide the body in something. What? You know what I mean? Like, somebody knew she died.
I don't know. I've heard some pretty bad stories of people from, like, I had a professor who, this was forever ago when I was going to school in Gainesville. He was talking about a really bad LSD trip, and all his friends thought that he was dead, and he woke up and they're dragging him out to the lake. Like, people freak out.
Yeah.
Like,
well, and there's another Arkansas case like that where, like, I think that's what happened. But
oh my gosh.
But like, hide like that, I mean, something went wrong and somebody knew she was dead.
Yes.
And for them to call the bones, they're calling it homicide. Something happened. But part of me thinks it could have been a freak out over shit. We really messed this up. And now it puts together a chain of events where we have to hide the evidence. I don't know. It's a tough one.
Yeah.
I thank you so much, Brandy, for talking it over with us. We love having you on here. Any excuse we can have.
Yes. I love to do this more often. It's, you know, these are tough cases, you know, and I'm just glad that even though it was 3 years too long that they found her, I'm glad they have, and that the mother and the parent, you know, the family doesn't have to constantly wonder what happened to her. Mm-hmm. You know, they have a place, you know, where, you know, that they, you know, they know they have some answers. Right.
But
the thing is that This is a very active investigation. I really think police know a whole lot more than what we do. And I feel like because of her timeline and because of her age, I think the suspects are maybe a limited pool. And I think they know that. And I think that they are probably one person coming forward and saying something away from solving her case. Something in me just tells me that they probably have put this timeline for her together pretty well from the time she was at that party to the time that her brother heard from her. I hope that they will go back and look at some of this phone evidence, figure out if they can find out where the phones were pinging, where she actually was before she got to the park. There's a lot of still unanswered questions in that. But again, this girl lived in a pretty small area, right? And she has 18. She's got some friends, but the people know who she was, you know, the police know who she was with the night before. So that's a place to start. I think we're just one people away from solving this case. I think they know a whole lot more than what maybe we think. So, or at least I hope so.
I hope so too.
Yeah.
I really do.
Any other thoughts before we get out of here?
I don't know.
Different stuff, but yeah.
I just like to, you know, make sure that circling back to the person and, you know, Ebby, she had a lot of moxie. She was ready to get out there, you know, and I remember even when as freshmen, I saw a lot of myself and her, like this whole little boy crazy teenager who just wants to get out there, meet some boys, hang out with some friends. And I got to respect that and the person that she was.
I think had things been different, she would have navigated through that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Then, you know, because most of us go through some sort of phase where we want to, whether it's rebelling or just try the world and see what's out there. And
yeah.
It's just awful that it happened this way. But
yeah,
I appreciate you bringing it back to the victim because, I think, again, the more I sort of, as a true crime sort of listener, consumer, whatever, the more it can center on these are human beings and these are human being stories. I think we get better about our discussions about it. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Get us out of here. Get us out of here.
This has been the female. Oh, thank you. That's
great. Hate it.
Yeah. Please come back. Maybe someday we come have wine in Dallas.
Yeah.
We know how to get there.
Anytime.
Okay, for real this time, Jason.
For real.
This has been the Female Mentor Podcast. We're the female mentors you always wanted and you knew you needed, but you never had. Here we are.
And we're out.